one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative for this way to men. See the Prabhupada's purport. No one wants to die and everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This trend is not only visible individually, but also collectively in the community, society, and nation. There is a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities, and the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living entity is evil by nature, and due to his bondage in material existence, he has to change his body over and over. This process is called the transmigration of the soul, and this migration is due to karma bandhana, or bondage to one's work. The living entity has to work for his livelihood because that is the law of material nature, and if he does not act according to his prescribed, he transgresses the law of nature and gives himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death. I know what that's for. Other life forms are also subject to the cycle of birth and death. From the living entity to human life, he gets a chance to get free from the law of karma. Karma, akarma, vikarma are very clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures, are called karma. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma. And that are performed by the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower forms are called vikarma. Of these types of action, that which frees one from the bondage of karma is preferred by intelligent men. Ordinary men wish to perform good works in order to be recognized and achieve higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But more advanced men want to be free altogether. Intelligent men know well that both good and bad works equally bind one to the material misery. Consequently, they seek that work that will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work. The instructions of Sri Upanishad are more elaborately explained in Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called Gita Upanishad, the cream of all the Upanishads. In Bhagavad Gita 3:9-16, the personality of God says that one cannot attain the state of nice karma or karma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the literature. The Vedas can regulate the willing energy of a human being in such a way that one can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When one realizes the authority of the Supreme, of the Personality of God, it is to be understood that he has attained a state of positive knowledge. In this purified age, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, cannot act, and one is enabled to work on the basis of nice karma. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death. Factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruitive work. A conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification. For his own selfish interest, immediate or extended, an ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment, and when the principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include a society or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names, such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, humanitarianism, etc. These isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhana, work which binds. But the Vedic instruction of Isha Upanishad is that if one actually wants to live for any of the above isms, he should be God-centered. There is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, socialist, communist, socialist, or humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. So this is a short report, relatively. Just some comments, what we've read so far. Prabhupada is stating that hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities is quite natural. That's not to say that, because it's natural, that's just what you should think of as natural. It's natural because the soul is eternal and doesn't want to be in its artificial condition, so it's natural to struggle for happiness, to want to experience eternal existence, become eternal, to want to come to a position of knowledge, become naturally full of knowledge. So that struggling in that way, that's natural, but that struggle is also karma bandhana, that which also binds. Struggling with a misconception of life means bondage and nothing, bondage and more struggle. Struggle to achieve what? More struggle. Like it says in the Bhagavatam, that all that the impersonalists or the materialists have to show for their hard endeavor is their hard endeavor, or it's described as their own labor, their own hard labor. That's all they can show. Therefore, people are very proud of their hard labor. They don't have anything to show. Nothing lasting. And it's interesting also that the definition the Prabhupada gives of karma is generally think of as pious, by following those prescribed duties that bring one to a elevation. That's karma. And then the alternative of that karma is to neglect those things, because neglecting those things then leads one to animalism, a lower species than animal. That's a deconstruction. The prefix V means not, or specifically here it means forbidden. Works that are forbidden. And akarma means without karma. So that's being referred to as Ishavasya is, or one prophet says, Ishavasya spirit or Ishavasya conscience, God-centered. God-centered means according to God's direction. That's what centers things on God. Not just making some claims. So the key to all of this is duties that are prescribed. So this little outline that I put together. the purpose of explained prescribed duties is to help one come to the position of knowledge. Specifically, Prabhupada says perfect knowledge. Of course, imperfect knowledge isn't knowledge. Just like the knowledge that comes from imperfect senses, we don't claim that that's knowledge. So perfect knowledge comes as a result of prescribed duty, and that perfect knowledge, then the preliminary for prescribed duty is to bring one to a higher stage. What's being described here is, on one hand you have karma bandhana, the attracted to fruitive activity. And on the other extreme is the condition of pure devotional service. So in the preliminary stage, the living entity is more towards the side of karma bandhana. And to give up fruitive activity, it can't be done in a preliminary stage, it can't be done immediately. Nor can that living entity just devotional service. They can't do that either. So the intermediate thing is, recommendations are coming from the Lord how they can simultaneously gratify their senses and make progress towards pure devotion. But this karma is meaning activities that lead to elevation to the higher planets or high condition of life on this planet. But that's what prescribed duties can do. That's the goal of those prescribed duties. Those who take up prescribed duties to achieve that intermediate goal only, they're also foolish. Like the Kundalini, because they're also bound. Get that other kind of reaction. So good reaction or bad reaction. They're both unwanted. But how the Bhagavad Gita reference is given, how they progressively lead to elevation is outlined both 3rd and the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Prescribed duties help the living entity go from the fluid of attached state progressively towards a position of enlightenment or knowledge. And a perfect knowledge is to understand, here it's described, in the reference from the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, someone who simply does the prescribed duty without attachment to the result. Because there's so many verses like that in the Bhagavad Gita. Just for the duty and be unattached to the result of that duty. That's described in this 18th chapter as the position of karma yoga. Find out what your duty is, perform that duty, and be unattached to the result of the duty. It even sounds something like what Havan Ashram is like. You have duty because of your psychophysical nature, you have some duty to perform. So just act according to that psychophysical nature, and it all belongs to Krishna, doesn't belong to you. That's called karma yoga, according to the 18th chapter. As opposed to the position of pure devotional service. The perfect knowledge is not just how to elevate yourself to a more desirable planet or a desirable position on this planet. That's material. So this can be taken as just like the 3rd chapter is karma yoga, the 5th chapter of Prabhupada calls karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness, and also the process of pure devotion. So that can be taken as a definition of the difference between the Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga. In Karma Yoga, one is encouraged to perform duty and give up the result. Give up attachment to the result belongs to the Supreme. And the process of Bhakti Yoga is that in which from the very outset, the understanding is, as these two of this mantra one and mantra two are describing, everything belongs to God, and therefore you can accept those things that God intends for your quota, and not accept other things knowing to whom they belong. So in other words, in Bhakti Yoga, the prior understanding is that everything is denying the servant. Therefore, it's not a matter of giving up the fruit, because that's also God's. If everything that you're utilizing is God's, then certainly the fruit is already God's. So the activity itself is devotion to God. And whatever comes of that act is also an expression of the devotion to God, and how it is rendered to Krishna also devotion to God. From the beginning and the end, it's not just a matter of getting rid of the unwanted part and then getting the wanted part. The unwanted part is that which binds me, so I give that up. But if one's knowledge or one's intelligence is not fully pure of Shuddha Buddhaya, then actually the motivation is something other than devotion. Motivation is, I want. Either I want elevation or I want liberation. But it's still not God-centered, it's still self-centered. I want. And the Ishavasya, or God-centered, understanding, what God wants. So God-centered, that's now up to the final part that we just read. What God wants, even if one's scope of understanding who I am is material, and based on that material understanding, one has a narrow selfish understanding or an extended selfish understanding. Either me or mine, my family, my nation, my race, my species of life, the human humanitarianism. I or mine. Both are the two psychic divisions of material consciousness, or false ego, material conception of life. I and mine. This Ishavasya spirit is that which both also are God-centered. Actually, the I and the mind are also gods. That's the previous verse. The thing is owned and controlled by the Lord. That's mantra one. Everything animate or inanimate is within the universe. It's owned and controlled by God. Then the therefore part follows. That's Ishavasya. God owns what I consider mine, also owns that. And what's outside of what I consider, God owns that. So besides my family, there's all the other families. They're also owned by and controlled by God. Or my nation, and there's all the other nations that are also owned and controlled by God, and my race or my species of life. All these movements, communism, all the persons who are part of political ideology, that's up. But then just apply it in a God-centered way. If God is meant to receive the benefit of this thing, whatever it is, my family, or my humanitarian work, or God is to receive the benefit. Then immediately it purifies. Immediately it elevates one out of the bodily concept. You can't stay in the bodily concept and have centered activity. They just eventually, as much as God-centered consciousness is there, the impurity and the basic concept of life gets fun. Because it's all pure, like it says, radiant like the sun. Any discussion? We have about 15 minutes left.
Mr. was saying those activities that will help a person come to this state of understanding of life. Understanding, but they also foolish because they don't imbalance it.
Yeah, simply performing prescribed this are sometimes mentioned both in reference to nice karma or akarma activity, devotional service, as an ashram is, they sound alike. Or in terms of the prescribed duties for someone who wants it. Some of the things. Or elevation, which is another material thing. So prescribed duties are there in both. So the fact that one has to very carefully consider when thinking of executing a prescribed duty is the goal of that prescribed duty. Just like when you meet somebody who says that they are practicing some kind of yoga, or meditation, or they're following some spiritual thing or path. You can get this shortcut, the whole conversation, by asking them, with a little proper exchange, by flattering them, oh, that's very nice. You must be a very spiritual fine person. Now please tell me, what is the goal? In this teaching that you're learning from, what is the highest thing that you're trying to achieve? What's the goal, the ultimate? Immediately. It's just saying, in someone who's presenting a philosophy, you can ask them, what's the truth that you know? Let's cut out all this other small talk. What's the highest truth that you know? This practice that you're doing, what's the ultimate goal of it? Or as your prescribed duty, what's the goal of it? So once that's very clearly in focus, and if it's not clearly in focus, then it can also, to do with that. Just crinkle it up in the garbage can. If they don't know what the purpose of it is, they're devoting themselves to something they don't even know what it's for, then that's just sentimentality. So the perfect knowledge, this is your question, that pure and perfect knowledge is that knowledge that takes you to the goal of life. Not something that's simply intermediate. It has to be, the Vedas provide that which has to be there, the intermediate stage also, for those that aren't ready for pure devotional service. Something that will gradually help them progress toward the goal. But that towards the goal without reaching it means, especially without knowing what it is, means further bondage. Further bodies have to be gotten until all material desires are eliminated. So prescribed duties have both of these functions. Ultimately, the function is to bring you to perfect knowledge. That I'm an eternal servant of God. And then function is in that position. It's just like you were reading an excerpt of the book earlier, that other types of happiness or enjoyment may be there, or may appear to be there, but one who is situated in relation to God doesn't take them up, because they know very well what it will lead to. It will illusion. Or it will lead to lesser experience of contact with God. Therefore, they don't want it. They push it away. For someone who's situated in perfect knowledge, that's their position. That's the benefit of that perfect knowledge. That's the benefit of the prescribed duties that they perform. They've gotten that understanding of realization. The thing to surpass that of God. Because if there were to surpass that of serving God, then those who are servants of God would leave their service to God to take that other better thing up. But those that are pure devotees aren't attracted to anything. So if I know, if I just perform this, the lesser condition is, if I just perform my prescribed duty, without knowing what the goal of that prescribed duty is, then I may get some elevation, and I also get another body to help my business. One's intelligence is not yet purified, the knowledge is not yet complete. Therefore, I speak about, say that the other stages of spiritualization, that they're incomplete, that means something. Very important to the devotee. It means it's not, I don't want it. I don't want liberation. I don't want merging into the existence of God or getting any of the kinds of liberation, because they're all included in devotional service. But if I just liberated, but I don't have the chance to search them, then I don't want that. because all I want is serving Krishna. Everything else is, I'm completely satisfied with that, because everything else is there.
Because someone puts his duty in the temple, for example, and he doesn't carry everything belongs to God and these all belongs to God. But ultimately, because he's working for the temple, he's hoping to teach me. So within the category of karma or karma?
No. It's within the Krishna devotional service. And the reason why that is because that service is being accepted under, or is being carried out and under the direction of a bona fide sannyasi, and therefore accepted and offered to Krishna.
So, without the meditation? Okay.
Yeah, because the instruction is there to perform those activities and to think of Krishna. There will be sometimes during the day when one thinks of Krishna, and there will be sometimes during the day when one is serving according to the order. So, as those things are being done, that service is accepted. Although imperfectly rendered, that this is accepted and offered to Krishna. And that one becomes gradually purified. As long as one stays faithfully and steadily on that path, gradually the complete attainment will fructify, according to one's sincerity of following. So that's just an earlier stage of devotion, of development of devotion. The little gaps where we just remember a little bit and then the gap closes again. And remember again and then the gap closes. So the idea of unaware devotional service is where it's not just gaps and the gaps become closer intervals, but it's one continuum of always remembering Krishna and always serving favorably according to the instructor, favorably meaning according to the directions given within scripture and given by the spiritual master. So that sounds, that falls in the category of karma, no karma for that activity. And again, why is that? It's because that service is accepted. Being in the order of the spiritual master and being accepted by the spiritual master and offered Krishna. That's the understanding of the practitioner of service.
I know that devotees often think that the people who don't take up this process of devotion are karmas. Isn't that kind of a misunderstanding?
Well, you can define the term karma in different ways. By the definition the Prabhupada gives in the purport, yes, they're technically the karmas. But also karmis, with another, just take another frame of reference, and they're karmis in that they are attached to the fruits of their labor, therefore karmis. Karmis, yams, yogis, and bhaktas. Those four positions. But it's very generous here, where he says that ordinary men wish to perform good works in order to be recognized and achieve higher status of life. Actually, ordinary men are just the dikarmis. One of the things when I was I read this several times. This transcendental knowledge is definitely transcendental. I mean, how many people have this understanding that I would get, but simply thinking of what is the interest of Krishna, that's the intelligent position. And it's true that that's the intelligent position. How many people are intelligent? You can't arrive at the transcendental position just by being a nice one and being pious and can't even touch it against another position. Just some hallucination that this knowledge has to Without knowledge ascending through the disciple succession, there is no access to transcendental life. Those who don't get the opportunity to hear from the devotees of the Lord have no access to transcendental life. There isn't an alternative. And that's what it says. There is no alternative to this way to man.
My question is, let's consider differently.
Not very many people can understand this philosophy. They read this book and they appreciate some things out of it, but to really understand what Prabhupada is saying, it takes purified consciousness. It takes chanting and practice of devotional service to understand what Prabhupada is saying. He's not just offering, nice life. He's offering finished. I remember one lecture that was very, because Prabhupada was performing sound effects. Everyone cracked everybody up. He was making the comparison between the process of devotion and other processes. He was saying that the other process is like goldsmith with a little hammer. Tap, 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 tap. Tap, 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 tap. And slowly they're making little dents in the piece of gold. But this process of bhakti yoga is like the blacksmith's hammer. One stroke. Done. Everything. Taught by this isavashyam of akarma, or nice karma, or process of devotional service, everything, all the business that you have to take care of in your field is finished. Not just getting a better situation. Because that's as far as the concept of God and what God can benefit you with that people have. Enjoy forever in heaven. Well, how can you enjoy forever in heaven if there isn't any understanding of who is God and what the relation with God is as a servant? It can't be. I mean, for a devotee, that's an interesting thing to understand. But for someone who is, it takes purified intelligence to understand what the benefit is that Prabhupada's trying to present.
Let's say that three girls. So one, let's say what if you have a devotee, a devotee, he's working, playing the video of people. So, if New York, for example, that is very expensive, everything is very expensive. The devotee is working, cannot offer this to the temple. Because he has so many expenses, he has to use every penny.
Right.
Now, the individual is a, it's a, he's a Kami Yogi. He's working also, but he doesn't do things because he's attached. So,
but that's not a Kami Yogi.
Let's say he's a big Kami Yogi.
Right.
So he's working, he doesn't give anything to the people because he's attached. The other one is working. He knows that, he's supposed to give something to the Krishna.
Right.
So I have so many friends and then that is what he
said.
He can have a given. So what is, how can you comment
on that? Krishna view that?
Yeah.
Well, you know the answer. Prabhupada explained in that Krishna is interested not in what you're giving him, but what you're holding back. So one who's giving the classic example of that is Hanuman the spider. Because of Hanuman's capacity, he was throwing boulders and the spider was kicking them to sand. As far as Ramchandra was concerned, they were forming equal. Because they were giving everything that they had. So Hanuman was thinking, my service is more important than that. But Hanuman, but Ramchandra said him and told him that's not the right way to see things. So one who's giving what he can to Krishna, Krishna knows what he can. Others may not have that understanding, but your question is from a transcendental point of view, what is to understand these two different situations comparatively. One is giving what he wants to give as much as he can, and he has nothing and next to nothing. Just like the story of Kolavisa Shiva. He had next to nothing, and he gave half. And in order to give half, he lived in, you know, half as simple of a situation as he could have if he didn't give half. His wish was to give him. So, person who is not understanding at all that he should Krishna, doesn't want to give to Krishna, then whether he's in a position to give or isn't in a position to give, he doesn't even want to, so there's no devotion. Krishna is completely unattractive. But with a devotion, even the offering is every, like Prabhupada tells everyone, for food, flour, meat, and water, and that when offered with a devotion, Krishna will accept. And if you put something nicer, then you should do that. Just like the Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami, the deities complaining why he was offering Mahadi. He was still involved with something. What can I do? I don't know, man. I can always see him on the screen and all these things are always happening. That's all I can offer you. Anyway, because of their devotion and they're all in such an intimate position of the deity, the deity is talking to them. And with that intimacy, even the deity is not only talking to them, but that doesn't mean that much intimacy is there. Or whatever else, that should be offered. And Krishna, I was speaking with one man from India that knew Mr. Roy Chaudhry. He grew up in the country, but he knew Prabhupada when Prabhupada was in his Vanaprastha stage of life and describing, you know, where Prabhupada would sit in the temple room when he was chanting japa and how he would study and, you know, some exchange between when he offered Prabhupada some fruits and then Prabhupada would describes some philosophy and discuss philosophy with him. And so he was remembering what the foodstuffs they ate. And it was very simple. A little this, a little that, a little that, and that was it. And then everyone was satisfied. So, to provide very nice situations materially for the devotees in the temple, if you want to do that, but it's also nice to set the simple, humble and austere condition. Actually, ten lives is for people who are attracted to them. Not austere to the point where it's unbearable, but austere, simple. Right. Funny enough, just, you know, give a piece of floor to stretch out on it. He's completely happy. He was stirring his the holy name. That's Brahmachari life. And Grihastha life also, like that, Prabhupada, Brahmachari and Grihastha, and Grihastha Brahmachari. Just simple life. Simple life in family, husband and wife, serving Krishna together. Simple. But whenever a nice thing one has, one gives that to Krishna. So what the sense of what you can give to Krishna, I mean, that can, and what's the application for that? Life is expensive and saving is better. So, okay. Now, what do you need? What are those things that are necessary for yourself? And what are those things that are not necessary for yourself? And that's a fine line, isn't it? What do you need? And don't take things. So regularly, for those that are cultivating renunciation, it's a good practice to regularly, means say periodically, just get rid of things. Just give away, give out gifts to people, give away, give them away. You need this, or no, I don't really need, it's just, I've been keeping it in my drawer or line, but I don't need this, and this, and this, and this, I don't need them. And maybe on a rainy day I can do that or that, but I don't need it. Even on a rainy day I don't need it. So, take what you need. That kind of purification helps one stay mentality of being dependent on Krishna rather than dependent on these things and having to worry about maintaining these things and protecting someone from taking these things and upping them so that they're still functioning, that, you know, as long as they're good. I don't get into that topic. There's some personalities who accumulate so many things. And thinking that this is for devotional service, it's just a bunch of clutter. They don't need it at all. It's just a burden, you think. I don't need it. So give it to someone who will use it in Krishna service. Or just give it away so you know it's not going to be an artificial dependency, an artificial thing that you just have to enjoy yourself about.
So this coming in the article is coming in the, for example.
Well, here's the answer. In more stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service.
But you explained it.
Nor can one completely stop of work. A conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. Then Prabhupada just repeats himself. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment.
So, you said that for someone who gradually lives himself, to press activities, then either sit on his planet and get a better condition on his planet or go to the high planet.
Uh-huh.
And we also know that on the high planet, since the degree of enjoyment is great, and the problems are also greater, actually,
the planet. Well, the attractions are greater. This generation, but to not, you know, to try to enjoy and to not share meditation.
Yeah, so how can you call it stimulation?
Well, elevation, elevate sense of elevation to a higher motivation. It's not that everyone in the heavenly planet are just degraded buffoons, they're great souls. Tapaloka, Janaloka, Siddhaloka, Brahmaloka, shouldn't be so egocentric as to think that, you know, we're it, because we're in the middle planets. And it's everything, having the planets with a bunch of degraded sense gratifying big souls. But that's also, it's also true that the attraction you're in is so much more powerful there. It's also very difficult and risky. So those greater opulences, it also has the opportunity for greater service. You can serve Krishna with whatever facility that you have. And if the facility that you have is greater, if Krishna provides you, not that you need to hanker for that, but if Krishna provides one with greater facility, then you have greater service that you can render. That's also nice. So anyway, elevation is in terms of the modes. More in the mode of goodness. Therefore, situated in the heavenly plane.
There's just two paragraphs left.
Bhagavad Gita 2:40 states that God-centered activities are so valuable that just a few of them, like this expression gets me, just a few of them can save a person from the greatest danger. The greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death. If some way or another a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by his human form of life and falls down in the evolutionary cycle, he must be considered most unfortunate. Due to his defective senses, a foolish man cannot see that this is happening. This is a very important statement. Although they know that this is people who are doing their prescribed duty, but they remain attached, neglecting their real purpose of life, missing their spiritual opportunity somehow or another. Due to the defectiveness, they do not even know that this is happening. Consequently, Sri Yashopanishad advises us to exert our energy in a spirit of Ishavasya. Being so engaged, we may wish to live for many, many years. Otherwise, a long life in itself has no value. A tree lives for hundreds and perhaps thousands of years, but there is no point in living a long time like trees, or being like bellows, or begetting children like hogs and dogs, or eating like a camel. A humble God-centered is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism and socialism. When altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Sri Yashopanishad, they become a form of Kali Yoga. This is this point. Even in the spirit of Yashopanishad, altruistic activities become a form of Karma Yoga. Such activities are recommended in Bhagavad Gita 18:5-9, so they guarantee their executor protection from the dangers of sliding down into the evolutionary process of birth and death. Even though such God-centered activities may be half-finished, they are still good for the executor because they will guarantee him a human form life at his next birth. In this way, and this has something to do with cheating the heavenly planets also, this way one can have another chance to improve his position on the path of liberation. One of the things that those that attain the heavenly planets, that's one of the teams. That even it may take living their whole life out, but again, they'll get a chance to continue where they left off in their devotional service. To whatever degree of God-centeredness there was in their activities that got them to that heavenly planet, that much is eternal, is not lost, and in their next life they'll get an opportunity to continue from that point. Now, they may not take that opportunity, but at least the opportunity is provided, and that opportunity alone is so near. Because the opportunity means the association with another devotee of the Lord. That's how the opportunity presents itself. Practically speaking, that's what we're doing when we're performing sankirtan. We're just, like the Christian expression, fish of men. We're just putting our nets out and our fish go into the net. That's what Krishna arranged. And so he arranges for those persons, those souls, just to do their devotional activities from previous existence. So we go and spread the holy name, and it awakens some people to their spiritual distance, and give them literature, and give them prasadam, and that way their existence is becoming progressively that much more purified, they have that much more devotional exposure that they have. Contact with Krishna and the relationship with Krishna revived that much more. That's what our function is. That's what our existence is. Glory to the Lord. Just to increase the devotional service of others and, you know, apply the process properly as well in our life.
So, you should
that's right.
This means someone is in the Bhutanaya, but also understand that he has to give up the results. That's what Prabhupada is talking about in the Sri Sri Panchi. But you may go to perform for some duties, but just give up the results. It's a different attachment.
Yes. So, and specifically mentioned in Ishavasya spirit. Now how do you get out of altruism God-centered? that God-centeredness is that you cannot claim yourself to be the provider of the result of that. If people get benefit, the credit goes to God. Mundane altruist philanthropist humanitarian is thinking, I am fine. I'm giving of myself during this world. This is what is described in Bhagavad Gita as the false sense of happiness that is characteristic of the Lord of goodness. Out of my largesse, I am helping these poor sniveling people. Starving over here and crippled over there, and because I'm so generous, out of my benevolence I'm giving. And one gets a false sense of well-being. Because in the next moment, boom, death is also coming to them. And all of their material assets are all squabbled. Boom. Finished. They want to be in the position, thinking of themselves in the position of God, even in the mode of good, and they're feeling more, that now I'm in more of a position to do that, to see all the knowledge that I have, because of my mode of goodness I've cultivated so much knowledge, and just see how much wealth that I have to give to these other less unfortunate or less fortunate persons, because of my mode of goodness that I've cultivated, I have to spend that. And because of my everything else, all my material assets, which are the product of all the more goodness that I've stockpiled, just see I'm in such a beneficial position. I'll spill a few drops here and there. And that's also described as part of the demoniac consciousness. So at the very end, Ishvara Hum Hum, they're describing how so many sacrifices performed, so much charity I have given, I am perfect and happy. It's built into their description. They're deriving their letter, power, stature, standing, from their sacrifices, charities, and penances. And so much more I will have. They're not the controller, but they're thinking of the controller. They're just fools. Anyway, so the goodness also renders one foolish. And I am the well-wishing friend of all the beings, instead of thinking that Krishna is the well-wishing friend of all the beings, and he is the controller, and he is in the world with the prize.
The prize man, who is it? Is it the karma or karma?
No, karma. Yes, and this definition that says here, he is performing prescribed duty. Therefore, good karma or karma as it's in the third place.
He's missing quite a bit of the results of Krishna.
No, he may be also, he's not the demon. in a mode of ignorance, denying the existence of God. Although depending on God all the same, he's acknowledging is in Krishna's hand, but his activity is not genuinely and fully that of devotion. Only by contact with pure devotees. Only by contact with this message, of this transmitted message. Not devotional service is not achieved by any amount of pious activity. A really nice description of that by Vishwanath Chakravarti in his Madhurya Pandambani. He's tracing out where does devotion begin? Because later on it goes on higher stages of devotion, but where does devotion begin? How does it start? And after ruling out some of the other things, this final conclusion, very logical ways of ruling it out, based on Shastra and with good common sense, the conclusion is the mercy of the Vaishnava. That's where devotional service begins. So the very, very pious man has no excess. And the innocent man, he also has no excess. But the mercy of Vaishnava does not necessarily discriminate pious and impious. When we go out in Harinam, we're not saying, stop, because this guy's in pain, stop him. And our book distributors sometimes do that, oh, it's a person who will take, and that's a person. But lo and behold, that person you thought would take won't take, and the person you thought that won't take will take. So who knows? Therefore, the former of Sankirtan simply desire in the most earnest way, please let me be an instrument. You act for me however you like. You have me approach wherever you like. You have me go where you know, have people come to see whoever you want them to hear the holy name. Let me just be as pure of an instrument for you that I can be. That's all that we have to meditate on and cultivate. As pure in our consciousness as possible, devoting the whole activity to Krishna, not just giving up the result of it. And then Harinam Sankirtan, what else can you do with giving the result of Krishna? But the purity of the consciousness with which you are performing that activity has a big effect on what the result is. How pure your consciousness, how pure is that, will determine the purity of your sound vibration. And that will have differing effect on the persons who are hearing. The purer your consciousness, is more than better, greater the benefit you're giving. And same with the preacher, or any of the other types of Sankirtan activity.